Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chain, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthology put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And one more quick message. Also, make sure to keep an eye out on the contest and topic boards being put up by our Late Night Poets hosts and hostesses on All Poetry, because Halloween week is coming up starting on Wednesday at 12:30 a.m. We will be kicking off Halloween week, and readers, writers, and commenters are always welcome to join in the fun. And hello, Rex.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, not much. Life is good. I've been enjoying a whole day of poetry. If I wasn't doing housework, I was reading and commenting on poetry, came up with a couple of contests. Had a great show. Show just before this with Daniel DeShino. Life is good. The weather's a bit chilly, but that's all right. Not nearly as cold as it could be, so I'm not complaining. And all that jazz. Dan actually recommended a musician to me. I'm going to have to check her out. I blank out on her name. I'll have to have him message you if he hasn't already her name. She's a newer girl, does a lot of covers. He says she does a really, he told me she does a really brilliant, her first name's Haley, I remember that. He says she does a brilliant cover of Jefferson Airplane's White Rabbit. And I told him I would definitely have to check that out. How about you? What's going on? Yeah. What's going on in your neck of the woods, or what's cooking with you?
Nothing.
Same old, huh?
Yep.
Did you finally conquer those trees?
Most of them.
Most of them. With your mighty axe and your big blue ox?
Yep.
Well, I suppose we do have a nice full board of poetry tonight, which I'm looking forward to delving into. And so whenever you're ready, Rex, go ahead. And what do we have first?
My Lichen Writing by Paul Brock. First, some fungus meets up with some algaes. Excuse my dumb science. Accept my apologies. Along comes this Cupid. This is where I get stupid. Explaining a lichen's sexual biology. It looks like a tiny little mushroom. Row by row, they quickly blossom. These things cling to boulders, looking somewhat like clovers. I picked one once. It felt like a prune. No one knew what to call them, you know. Then along came Henry David Thoreau. While he was writing his Walden, he wondered, what shall we call them? They're like figs, dates, or prunes. Whoops. I'm afraid I need to go. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. And this one was written for a contest where it was an 8 spots only contest that I did. And it was all to one prompt. There was just one quote that was the prompt. And that was a quote by Henry David Thoreau, which was, the lichen on the rocks is a rude and simple shield, which beginning and imperfect nature suspended there still hangs for wrinkled trophy. And I really liked this write by Paul. You know, it was, to me, it was fun and entertaining. I like how it takes a glimpse at the humorous approach to the history of naming the lichen, or lichen, however you pronounce it. I always thought it was lichen for some reason. I think I heard it that way, but it's probably lichen or lichen. It's like that Monty Python movie about the history of the world. But it's like the you know, kind of like a whole Monty Python thing of the history of lichen. I really like where he says, excuse my dumb science, accept my apologies. Along comes this Cupid. This is where I get stupid. Explaining a lichen's sexual biology. And that was great. And then no one knew what to call him, you know. Then along came one Henry David Thoreau. While he was writing his Walden, he wondered, what shall we call them? They're like figs, dates, or prunes. Whoops, I'm afraid I need to go. And I love the humor in the end line, the connection between, you know, prunes and oops, having to go. At least that's how I interpreted it. Perhaps my mind is traveling to the wrong bodily functions, but either way, it was quite clever and entertaining, and I always appreciate Paul Brott's writing. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the question is, how much of that soft, spongy material did he grab before he had to drop his pants?
That's a good question.
Yep. Because that last line does kind of hint on the idea, oops, well, I got to go and grab a handful and head on it into the bushes for a quick deposit. Oh, I like this. It is soft, and it is, well, I wouldn't go so far as to figs, dates, or prunes as well as how it feels, but I guess that depends on where you put it.
Right? Right? I can't imagine it'd be very, well, I can't imagine anywhere you put it would be very pleasant, you know?
Well, it is soft and spongy.
Is lichen an edible or a poisonous, or, like, do you know?
I wouldn't eat it.
I wouldn't eat it either, but I just wasn't sure because, you know, I wasn't sure if maybe technically it is edible. You know, I do know it's slippery as all heck. Like, you know, and it starts growing on rocks, especially around rivers and stuff. It gets, man, all slippery. So, yeah. Yeah. But,
All right. Yeah, you can't eat lichens.
Oh, you can or can't?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that's interesting to learn. Very cool. Very cool. I like that. Oh, speaking of fungi, did I tell you that my teenager harvested puffballs and from the forest and cooked them up?
Huh.
We experimented with different ways. We found out that their texture, once they're cooked, is kind of like tofu, and they absorb, like we slice up, because you got two huge ones, and we sliced it up, and the first time we put too much oil in the pan, and we should have used butter anyways, but she put too much oil in the pan, and they were like way too greasy, plus it didn't have any seasoning. Then we tried with salt and pepper, but the best way we had it was with salt and pepper, and then I took some chopped garlic and she sauteed that, and we cooked it with the sauteed garlic, and then we saved some that I added to rice, and that I added to rice, and I can't remember what else I had in it, but onions, mushrooms, rice, onions, and chicken. Yeah, that was it. Good stuff. Good stuff. Interesting. I don't know if I'd go out of my way to eat it again, but it was still interesting to try. So I have noticed, Rex, I wasn't going to say anything because I thought maybe you were going to go back up to them, but I have noticed you skipped over our two carryovers. Like maybe after this one, right, if we could go back up to the two carryovers, that would be great.
Oh, crap.
So.
All right.
So I see we have Don't Underestimate the Simple, which I'm guessing you'll go ahead and read. Or did you read the last one?
You get this one.
I get this one. All right. Sounds good. All right. Oh, and just so you know, I did send you a message.
Right.
Well, geez, I don't know why I just put myself on mute to read a poem. That wouldn't have done a lot of freaking good, would it? All right. But before
Where'd
I do
read,
I'm going to go ahead.
Hello?
What's that?
Hello? Hello? Where are you, Pam? What's
I'm
going
right here.
On? Hello?
Uh-oh.
Hello.
I guess Rex is
Did
having
you put
some problems.
Are you mutating?
I am not mutating, Rex. All
Well, you've got this one to read by Oshini Creations called Don't Underestimate the Simple.
All right. So I'll go ahead and give this a read. And Don't Underestimate the Simple by Oshini Creations. Lichens are organisms that are seen as simple, but they perform various roles vital for survival. So let their understanding within your life rekindle your belief that simple things contain the keys to a great revival. Lichens fulfill many roles within their daily journey, such as being a source of food or monitoring pollution. So don't underestimate the simple lichen army, as to many of Earth's cries, they contain the solution. In the same way, simple lichens are crucial to the survival of great earthlings. In the same way, learning simple basics are crucial to the journey of achieving great things. End poem. And Rex, can you hear me now?
Yep.
Well, good. Good. I'm glad. I was worried we were going to have to do a whole lot of trying to get you back on. So, very cool. All right. Well, before we comment, I'm going to go ahead and bring on area code 903. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to, please?
Yes, ma'am. My name is Little Gary from East Texas.
Hey, Gary.
Well, hello, Gary. Glad you
hello.
Could call
How
in. How are you doing?
Making it. Yes, ma'am.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear that. Very cool. All right, and Rex, what did you think of Oshini's write?
Well, you could have waited for the answer when you questioned, because it's right here. They are edible, amongst other things, and hey, they do proliferate quite well. They are part of the not just for rocks. You find them on the on trees and around the bases of trees too. So they do perform their daily duties, and this is quite the informative piece. So nicely done, Oshini.
You know what? I have to agree. It is a very informative piece, filled with a lot of scientific facts. And I probably should have remembered from reading this. Plus, the other reason I should have remembered that lichen is edible is it's one of the things that deer survive on during winter time. You know, like bark and lichen is something that they often help them survive during when food is scarce in the winter. I also like how she gives us the scientific facts. It's very informative, but she pulls in a lesson at the end. In the same way, learning simple basics are crucial to the journey of achieving great things. You know, so just an amazing write on the idea of how the little things in life are often what lead to the growing of greater things. So very well done. And Gary, did you get a chance to hear Oshini's right?
Yes, ma'am. And I have to agree with both of y'all. I felt like, because I watch a lot of animal shows and stuff, it's very entertaining to me. And I felt like it was National Geographic from the get-go as you were reading it without knowing anything about it. And I felt that, things start from small things to lead to greater things. And I got all of that. And I thought it was awesome. And the way it was wrote and professional to me. Yeah, I mean, honestly, what I'd call a professional poem.
Absolutely. I like that. Absolutely. I have to agree. And Rex. What do you got for us next?
Broken Glass and Ignorance by Jessica Wheeler. And you've got a sound clap, I think.
We do, yes. Yes, we have a recording for this one. And let me just go mosey over there, and here we go.
It hovers and it lingers as shadows threat to chase beyond our feeble fingers to change its path or pace. It thrives on past the present. All born will play this game. From king to common peasant and suffer just the same. Unseen and unexpected, yet ever in your thought, demands to be accepted if in its web you're caught. Statistics might mislead you, no secret to prepare. The tales you read can bleed too, need only be aware. In ignorance this might be, though minuscule the chance, attempt to alter slightly, cut in on fate's cruel dance. Be wary of what's not known, avoid each sidewalk's crack, wish on a broken wishbone, spill salt and toss it back. Some say I'm superstitious, but rarities are true, and won't be deemed fictitious when they happen to you.
Great read there, Jessica. Thank you very much for the recording. Just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, then the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And this was actually a carryover from a show we had a couple weeks back where or a week back maybe, I don't remember for sure, but it was on the topic of superstitions. And Gary, your thoughts on Jessica's poem.
Awesome. I'm so glad you asked me. I'm just going to be honest and tell you how I felt. I felt like it was a Renaissance type of reading. Felt like I was in that era as I closed my eyes and listened to it. And I love the, like, I rhyme like the same rhyme all the way through, but I love the double rhyme, all the way through, whatever professional name that's called. And in telling the story, it just hits me hard as like a Renaissance. Bam, 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 and I loved it. I thought it was awesome. Told a great story, and then hit that double rhyme every time, and I liked it. It's very, very good.
It is, and she does have a lovely reading voice. I like calling it the double rhyme. I always just call it ABAB rhyme pattern, which is a great pattern, and she does it very well. She stays consistent. And you know, of course, you know, sometimes it's fun to play and mix things around with rhyme. But I do think that when you choose to have a consistent rhyme pattern, it can add a polished look to a poem. And Rex, your thoughts on this, right?
Well, it does walk on that note of that which we say we're not, yet we find the illusion of superstition anyway, whether it's tossing at the salt over your shoulder because you spilled it, or you avoid the cracks in the sidewalk. That little note to a childhood, step on a crack, break your mother's back, and taking that wishbone off the turkey and all right, I got the bigger half, I get the wish. Those little tidbits that get taught just out of passing on. They aren't really given out as a superstition. It's just that things people do, yes, they often end up leading into that notion of, yeah, you're a bit on the superstitious side. Do you walk under ladders? No. Well, of course not. That's just dangerous. It's just a matter of, like having the black cat walk across you in front of your path, right? You avoid it. But
absolutely. It is. And yes, I had noticed, I liked your observation there about, you know, how the talks about the saying how it's the things that we say we are, but we're not. I thought this had wonderful rhyme and imagery. I like how it speaks to me on, you know, there's a bit of, you know, I think a kind of a humor in not taking any chances when warding off bad luck. You know, like the idea of better to be safe than sorry, especially at the idea that, you know, thinking that bad luck could just be peering right around the corner. And, you know, I like how this speaks on those superstitions that seem mostly to, that we learn as a child. And, you know, kind of, to me, speaks on the idea of the guilt put upon us in our youth if we don't do things, you know, just right, you know, avoiding that crack in order not to break our mother's back. Yeah, I really like where she says, unseen and unexpected, yet even in your thought, demands to be expected. If it's web, you're caught. If in its web, you're caught. And the idea that life can take those wrong turns, and you always hope for the best, but you're never quite sure if that's going to happen. And I think superstitions are a way for us to feel as if we have some control in our life. And, you know, and although obviously, you know, as we've talked about before and you've mentioned before, Rex, you know, a lot of superstitions are just about having common sense, while other ones are just, you know, simply what we've been raised with. And, you know, I like at the end where she says, some say I'm superstitious, but rarities are true and won't be deemed fictitious when they happen to you. So in other words, you know what, don't come to me because I'm going to tell you I told you so. And great write by Jessica and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Locked Behind by Grant G. Locked behind his sense of fear, he quietly lies on prison's top tier, all his life quiet and shy, underneath addiction a gentle guy. Let's take a look at the world he came, a tiny little town, no father to blame. His mum was his all, but she was troubled herself, a dancer and a whore, he didn't know wealth. Bedraggled clothes, shoes always too big, embarrassed as a child, kids called him a pig. School was like hell. He didn't learn much at all. He didn't return after taking a fall. He fell from a tree, bedridden he was. No one would know. Bullying was the cause. 2 years in the house, no visitors would call. He read and he dreamed. One day he'd walk tall. At 14, he left home to the city he ran. The hustle and bustle could make him a man. He begged and he stole until he joined up with a gang. Then he ran and he dealt. He whistled and sang. He walked with cause, facing up to his peers, but was never himself. He had covered his fear. Feet hit the floor as he walks to and fro. His feeling inside, he won't let anybody know. And on.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And Grant was inspired by the J.B. Priestley quote, many a man is praised for his reserve and so-called shyness when he is simply too proud to risk making a fool of himself. I thought this had strong, hard-hitting lines and, you know, powerful, emotive, and heartfelt lines. I like how it speaks on, you know, and like is a difficult thing to say in a poem that speaks on neglect and bullying, but, you know, the way that Grant expresses that these this imagery works really well. And but you have this child who lives with neglect and bullying, and who grows into a man who cannot trust to share his fears. It speaks on that idea of how the way we're treated in childhood has an impact, and I also think it speaks on the idea of how we have to try to move into becoming a new person responsible for our own actions and not necessarily blame our past, but that is really difficult to do. You know, because oftentimes if you're treated with neglect as a child, you learned as an adult to treat other people with neglect and even yourself. I really like where he says, 2 years in the house, no visitors would call. He read and he dreamed. One day he'd walk tall. At 14, he left home to the city he ran. The hustle and bustle would make him a man. And he begged and he stole until he joined up with a gang. Then he ran and he dealt. He whistled and sang. So, you know, I feel like right there is the idea of the crushing of hope, the transition from somebody who had some sort of hope that, you know, they were going to go off in the big city. They were going to become, you know, this proud, strong man, and they were led down an even darker path. So raw, gritty, and real, and very well done. And Gary, your thoughts?
Absolutely. Good comment. I totally agree with you on that, and it's relatable, unfortunately, in a lot of ways. And I got a Poe feeling. I know it sounds weird and everything, but as it was read, I just got that the rhymey Poe feeling to it, and with the relatableness and the hard-hitting lines that's in it. As you said, it's very enjoyable. I mean, on a good upper level type of feeling for me. You know, it's what you would want if you're reading poetry in a book. You know, you want to come across things like this, and I thought it was unbelievably amazing.
It was absolutely great comment. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, fear is what led him down that road, and he kind of hits on that note. He walked with cause facing up to his peers, but was never himself. He had covered his fear. The idea of the gang life offering up that note to camaraderie to the point where there was always somebody at your back, so you never really had to walk with that open note to fear. You can cover it easily. So he, in essence, ends up becoming the fool that that was noted in the in the prompts, because he might have had it good for a while, but he never learned anything. And in that process, he thought he could get away with it forever. Yet the fool ends up the top tier in a prison system.
Absolutely. Great observations, Rex. I especially like what you had to say about how the joining of the gang gave him, you know, people to cover his back, and so therefore he never had to really face his fears alone or speak up as a man alone, you know, and the idea of thinking that, you know, forever you could get away with something. So very cool. And what do you have for us next?
Well, what else can I say, y'all?
I like how he says, y'all. It got me good. Okay. It's called What Else Can I Say, Y'all? By Little Gary. I gave her my heart, and she threw it away. She wants to leave, and I want her to stay. If love is free, then why do I pay? She's breaking my heart, y'all. What else can I say? My blue eyes are wide open, but everything's gray. I'm so lost that I can't find a way. If happiness was food, I'm at an empty buffet. Damn, I wish she really loved me, y'all. What else can I say? I thought I was feeling happier today, but now I'm crying, staring out my window at an empty driveway, hoping she'll come back home and not going to stray. I guess this is the price for love that I have to pay, y'all. What else can I say? My cheeks is a place where my tears go to play, and they haven't quit doing it since the other damn day. I want them to stop, but they never obey. Wait a minute, I hear a car coming, y'all. But it's not her. What else can I say? I need some help, so I'm yelling Mayday. A girl broke my heart and thought it's okay. I guess she didn't know that love only works if you're meeting halfway. But there's no book on love, y'all. What else can I say? Maybe I'll find love on my next payday. Then I'll stop writing, trying to chase my blues on away, and paper won't be the stage where I put my crazy life on display, but I guess y'all will just have to wait to find out. What else can I say? End point.
Great Great read there, Gary. I'm glad you called in to share this with us. Very cool. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I do like the title and the fact that it's the end run with a little bit of a twist and tease in here and there with the wordplay. But you ran it in mono rhyme straight through from that 25, 30 lines. That's not an easy thing to do and keep it going. You had a nice little beat set in with it too, so it read just the way you wanted to it as you were rolling through the whole piece. But this does hit on that note of what you give for one, yet it's never returned except the pain she dishes out the back door, front door, or any door as she's going out. So, but I did, you hit on that note, maybe I'll find love on my next payday. So that kind of, all right, maybe you're actually looking for love in all the wrong places.
Right on, right on. Good look. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I had a similar thought and the whole idea that, if you only are finding love on payday, then, yep, obviously something's wrong. But I thought this had, and wonderful comment there, Rex. Yeah, I thought this had great rhyme and flow. It was just brilliant the way you kept the flow going with the inner and end rhyme and the word play. I really like your use of the phrase, if happiness was food, I'm an empty buffet. Damn, I wish she really loved y'all. What else can I say? And I like the repetition of what else can I say? And, you know, because there's an irony in that you say it in every single stanza, and you have a few stanzas. The idea that every time you think there's nothing more to say, something else comes up. It's kind of like the idea that just when you think a person can't get any more stupid or can't get any more evil, they prove you wrong. They prove that, yes, they can. And I also really liked the part that said, I need some help, so I'm yelling Mayday. A girl broke my heart and thought it's okay. I guess she didn't know that love only works if you're meeting halfway. And there's a great wordplay in the use of the word Mayday, the idea of the sinking ship, and, you know, so you're yelling for help. And then the idea that I think there's a real thoughtfulness in the idea that, you know, in relationships, there has to be a meeting halfway, a kind of a, you know, and both people giving and taking rather than just one person giving and one person taking. Great, right, Gary, and very well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much. What else can I say, y'all?
There you go.
Oh, double dipping.
There you go. And all right, Rex, what do we have next?
A lichen mask hides a trophy wife.
Master of self-destruction. Oh, sorry. Yep, I realized that. I didn't mean to pause too long. All right. Master of self-destruction, her conniving, malicious lies spread like lingering liking, a fungus of fallacies casually causing calamity, toxified, punctured hearts tearing apart her family, with one arm around her withered neck, a husband carries his trophy wife to their bed. Wrinkling, freshly ironed and made sheet in an azure sea of false hope, ambition sinks. Warm stings of scummy hands take up space, crashing like waves upon her battered face. A veil of sheer lace she uses to hide in crowds, covering up impurities he's planted inside and out. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's that second stanza which kind of offers up a different notion, then walks into the third one with one arm around her withered neck. Her husband carries his trophy wife to their bed, wrinkling freshly ironed and made sheets. In an azure sea of false hope, ambition sinks. Warm stings of scummy hands take up space, crashing like waves upon her battered face. A veil of sheer lace she uses to hide in crowds, covering up impurities he planted inside and out. So the first stanza is what she's been turned into because of the whole thing. The second stanza hits on that notion of, all right, there's something there, but it's always ugly at the back end. And the third stanza offers up that note of where she finally is because of that first stanza. Bruised and battered, she hides, so she lies, and she connives.
Yep, exactly. Great comment there, Rex. And Gary, your thoughts?
Yes, ma'am. I was going to stay and hear one more, and wow. You know what I mean? It was so much, man, like so far over my head and with the words and fanciness of it. And it's like what I would consider to be like real poems that people like that's a poem, you know, and that's the feeling. And it's so much like I didn't know if I was feeling creepy or in love and so many emotions during the read of that. That I just, you know, way over my head, like amazing, for real. And that's how I felt.
Absolutely. Yep. Great comment. Yeah, I gave this one the bronze in the contest because of her imagery that she uses and the fact that the lines have such a strong emotional punch. And I really like how the phrase, a fungus of fallacy casually causing calamity. And I like that because I feel like she used the idea the way that lichens cling to rocks and trees to represent the idea of a person whose negativity clings to those around them. But, you know, it's as Rex was saying, you know, the first part points out her negativity, but the last part gives the reason for her negativity. The fact that, you know, she's dealing with this abuse that she has to cover up both physically and emotionally. And right, and another part I really felt was strong was where it says, wrinkling freshly ironed and made sheets, an azure sea of false hope, ambition sinks. And I like that because, first of all, it brings in the wrinkly texture of the lichen as a metaphor, and it speaks to me on the idea of when you're in an abusive and controlling relationship, how you do everything possible to keep that person happy, you know. And to me, this speaks on the idea of making sure, you know, the sheets are ironed and everything looks in place in order to give yourself that sense of not only false hope, but false security. So, wonderful write by Jenny, and very well done. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
The Silent Struggle by Liquid Mind Forever. And what cultured pearl waits, clinging inside its bed intestate, present, past, or future, she imitates while she waits. Does she have a will of her own to disown the marrow from the bone, stay in tone or rest in grit alone? Is there shelter among the sand? A silent gland pumps pulses, convulses to produce her outlandish gem, alone with them, the partners. She dances and sways in the whoosh and whirl without worry or fret. She'll let the tides roll in, roll out, sense doubt come about in right fashion as we prize her Battle of the Bulge. End poem.
Great, great read there, Rex. This is just, to me, a brilliant write by Deborah. By Liquid Mind Forever. I gave her the silver in this contest because of her imagery and metaphors, her strong, hard-hitting lines. And I liked her interpretation of the prompt, because oftentimes we judge things for how it looks. We look at lichen and we see something ugly. It, obviously, as we've learned, it is something that is very useful, very important in ecology. And here she uses that idea, to me, to represent how we judge people for their appearance. And, this to me especially speaks on how on a woman who struggles with the harsh emotional suffering on inside while putting on a front for an adoring public. Oftentimes, we admire people greatly for staying skinny, especially in certain areas of work like modeling, television, dance, as we have here. She lets the tight roll in and out, stands out, comes out in the right fashion. She dances and sways. I love that imagery. As we prize her Battle of the Bulge. And yes, it's a wonderful thing to stay healthy and in shape. But so oftentimes we look at someone's outward appearance and we praise them for being skinny, not realizing that perhaps, and this isn't every skinny person, obviously, but, I have known people and I have had friends who my best friend in high school dealt with an eating disorder and, which put her in the hospital. Thank goodness, she's fine now and obviously years later. But just the emotional impact and the intelligence in this and the idea of how this admiring crowd believes that this young woman has her life completely together because she keeps her body skinny, and yet they have no idea of what's going on the inside. So powerful, right, and very well done. And I see Gary has left us. So good night, Gary. Thank you for calling in. Much appreciated. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that poem. Your thoughts?
That last line kind of says it all. As we prize her Battle of the Bulge, so and it does kind of hit on. You can walk this in a number of things. That sort of the pearl waits. Does she have will of her own to disown the marrow from the bone, stay in tone, or rest in grit alone? Yeah, there's struggle within that one. And there's this shelter among the sand, the silent gland pumps, pulses, convulses, produce her outlandish gem, along with them, the partners. Now, there's a different tone in that, that can walk into pregnancy, or that can actually walk into surrogacy. The dance and sway, about right fashion, that hits on the idea of the common motif and mode of the fashion houses, what they produce and how it's parsed out among the masses. So this doesn't hit on a singularity, it walks on a few stages.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment, Rex. I was also thinking that, as you were commenting, I was thinking there was a battle called the Battle of the Bulge. And yes, there was. It was in World War II, and it was a last-ditch attempt of the Germans to gain control of the war, which I don't know. I don't think necessarily that's what Liquid Mind Forever meant. I still go with my original comment, but I thought that, that would add an interesting layer to the end line, duality, But, yeah, great comment, Rex. And what do we have next?
We've got A Lichen Walks Into a Bar by Dot Wright.
Oh, I'm so glad I get to read this one. It is so much fun and a great limerick chain. So, a lichen walks into a bar, peruses an organism from afar. Could you be my brother? He says to the other. Please forgive if this sounds too bizarre. My parents were an Allie and Flip, aligned in organic partnership. Fungi loves algae, there's no analogy, began a symbiotic courtship. I say this to you, lichen to lichen, I truly believe you are my kin. We both live on rock, we're all of the same stock. I hope these facts will enlighten. The other lichen began quite obtuse. Neither of us have any roots. No mother, no father to worry or bother. I'm cutting this line of thinking loose. Well, then you can go straight to hell. Your parents loved you quite well. So go sit on your rock and continue to gawk at the essence of my end of tale. End poem. And, yeah, I found that right to be quite fun and entertaining. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, that opening, could you be my brother, he says to the other, please forgive, this sounds too bizarre. Then the notation to parents, kin, we both live on rock, we're the same stock, and it'll be facts all night. The idea of the bar scene, and then that final kiss off, well, you can go straight to hell, your parents loved you quite well, so go sit on your rock and continue to go at the essence of my end of tale. The idea, hey, I'm walking out the bar and you ain't going to get no lichen as it sees its way out that door.
Exactly. Great comment there, Rex. First of all, I like that you wrote this in the limerick form. It was entertaining, but it was also filled with information. It kind of reminds me of the way, a grade school teacher might teach children about lichen. I thought it was wonderful personification. I also really like the title, A Lichen Walks Into a Bar. The starting line for a classic joke, a donkey walks into a bar or a priest walks into a bar. Great interaction between the two lichen. He says, I say this to you, lichen to lichen, I truly believe you are my kin. We both live on rock. We're of the same stock. I hope these facts will enlighten. And then the fact that they're arguing. The other lichen began quite obtuse. Neither of us have any roots. So in other words, how can we be related? And I like that. I think it's excellent, right, and very well done. So, what do we have next, Rex?
Nature Likes Lichen by Ima Rima. The life form lichen we be called, not an animal, not a plant, an algae fungi mix found sprawled on most surface we gallivant. In a relationship of worth, give and take of mutual need, we can survive all over earth. Long living and hardy indeed. Now for the purpose of this rhyme, we do particularly be on rock surface in place and time, but rude and simple, no, not we. We're complicated and polite, like in our mom nature's delight. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. As always, a wonderful sonnet form, modern sonnet form by Ima Rima. Great rhyme and flow, great imagery. Again, we have awesome personification of lichen and another great title, Nature Likes Lichen. It's funny and interesting to me because when I put up that quote, You know, of course, I was really curious to see what people would get from it. And what I ended up realizing is that I got a lot from it because I ended up learning a lot from these eight poems that were put up. I really like the use of the word gallivant. On most surface, we gallivant in a relationship of worth. Give and take of mutual need, we can survive all over Earth. And I like how the line, we can survive all over Earth, speaks on the idea of how you can find lichen and other forms of fungus within, like, all over the world. And the idea of how there's so much potential within this one small spreading organism. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, he bites at the notion of simplicity. Rude and simple? No, not we. Yet they are a simple life form, yes. But as you said, they survive all over the place and they do offer up things, well, as food or as food for other creatures, even some are poisonous to keep other things away from where they are. But they do provide other uses where some things won't grow, they will. And they are a hardy breed in itself. So even in their simplicity, they're not really simple. They're a complex life form that actually walks its own tone and has its needs and richness in forestry all over the world.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is so true. That's so true. I actually read an article about, and it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't lichen, but there was actually a form of fungi found at the Antarctic Circle. Like, it was found basically, when they have research stations and then they get abandoned and left behind. It was this type of a microscopic fungi found growing on one of those abandoned research stations at the Arctic Circle. But I am going to have to send my teenager to go gather up some lichen in the forest, so that her and I can make, like, lichen soup or something like that. Or I don't know how exactly you would cook lichen, but I imagine it going into a soup or something. Yeah, so, all right. And what do we have next, Rex?
Lichen on Rocks by Spring Sky 39.
In the deepest woods I have observed, streams that ripple as they curve, with my wish to explore the other side, and crossing the stream I have tried. It has proven that some peaceful places are dangerous steps as water races, with the lichen veneer slick as any ice, and I have fallen there once or twice. And though wet each time, I've survived, a little more careful since grown wise, knowing Mother Nature, a wonderful gal, with us two remaining the best of pals. End poem. And what a absolutely beautiful poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, yeah. Note to learning and understanding and appreciating that which you come across and venture into. You got to remember, otherwise you do it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep, that is so true. Yep, it does have those words of wisdom. And, you know, I do like how it speaks on learning to proceed with caution. But, and this has great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery, an excellent write on learning to proceed with caution, but also realizing that the mistakes that you make in your adventures aren't necessarily Mother Nature's fault, and that I like how Spring Sky speaks on the idea in the end lines of still remaining friends with Mother Nature, still having that love and respect for Mother Nature. Oh man, when I was a kid and we lived in the middle of the woods, it was basically like we lived a couple miles away from my grandparents. And in order to get to my grandparents, we'd walk along the edge of the lake and then up through a trail through the woods. And there was one time I was walking with this friend of mine, and there was a door. Don't ask me why, but there was a wooden door floating on the edge of the lake, and it was covered with algae, you know, which of course, like lichen, is very slippery. And for some reason in my head, I thought I would see what would happen if I tried to stand on that wooden door, and I just, bam, there was no traction whatsoever. I just hit it full force with my back. That poem made me think of that when I first read it, and even now, because that was my lesson where I learned, yeah, you know what? If something is covered with green stuff and it's near water, be extra careful. And especially if it's a door. If you see a door floating on the water, don't necessarily try to stand on it. So, you know, lessons learned. And what do we got next, Rex?
I'm guessing that's A Wrinkled Trophy by Peter Tholen. Gray moths on stretched scrotums, an ancient fornicator to wedding guest corner, tell a ballad of woe. Once a mighty Viking, Rowan and Rapin, sleeping in back home, Helga on me back. Do this, do that, cat de-sex, bucket would leak, her with kid wanting more meat. Ancient emperor smoking special blend, to navel gaze down, notes such shrinkage. Once a hot sword of pleasure, keep countesses, concubines in line, swearing allegiance to helmet and horn. Once great flag to brag and flap, have them all reconsidering, if doubting lesbians Anglicans, such a worthwhile organ. Morning's henhouse fountain, cock screening lust, once upon a farmyard time, riding hood now all grown up. Condoms of career options, considerations, modern sailors to pay for pleasure, red light harbor, whilst gangplank condemned, pub of the ancient fate sublime for a second person in. Set trophies of merriment, tarnished to be melted down, Robin Hood and fairies gone to hollow bones, list of good times, yelping stallions, all beach bound. That slut geology came to town, uncle erosion, grandma gland, minerals of little comprehension, such a worm to dangle over gravity's well. Midget turtle, little girl to take home, keep in a humid aquarium, but nil by mouth resurrecting surface floating. To all lost souls in chronic need of exorcism, fathers were reversing machines to love their infants. Sex addicts, reason for existence, soft but short. Songs of Leonard Cohen, metaphorically stripped. Hotels by airports, hostess to bless soft-headed Suzanne banana-sucking. Chanting denizens of mortal time, graffiti of life's office underground, subways going home, choir of Celtic Dominicans, scarlet gone with wind. Last confession, Eliot in four quartets, Spanish translations, Einstein of unsolved equations, mustache soup stained. Farting on her death row gurney, castration, an Aztec option, circumcision, and in between, once when gods were thirsty, paradox, a fact. Poets employed to public enchant, Owen in the trenches, Larkin in aisles of nonfiction, Platt with head in oven, all dusted and gone. Time the wrinkleless fancy, earlobes dangling, skin of indecision, Mona hanging, organ disappearing on belly's horizon, King Charles having a private audience, and both.
Great read there, Rex. I really liked this one. I gave it the gold in the contest because of his creative approach with his imagery and metaphors. I mean, right away he grabs your attention with the imagery of gray moss on stretched scrotum, an ancient fornicator. The second stanza, when he gets into once a mighty Viking rowing and rapping, sleeping in back home, Helga on me back, really made me think of the comic strip. What was it, Hagar the Horrible? Do you remember that one?
Yep.
I thought of that one. That was very cool. and his use of sexual innuendos, you know, because, you know, you think of the sexual process of lichen and how it can't be a pretty sight at all. But really, oftentimes, sex itself isn't a pretty sight. I mean, it's enjoyable, but yeah, let's face it. You know, you have sad trophies of merriment. You have, you know, what is that one line that he had? Something about midget turtle, yeah, midget turtle. And condoms of career options, considerations, modern sailors to pay for pleasures, right, red light of harbor, Wolf gangplank condemned, Pablo the ancient fate sublime for second person him. You see this idea of society's judgment of people as they age and can no longer be as virile necessarily as they once were. I really thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors, and to me was a brilliant and entertaining write on the passing of time that brings changes to life, to love, and to the body. Where the part about the dangling earlobes, you know, the way the ears kind of stretch out as you get older, but also the idea of, like, you know, people who wear those, like, really heavy earrings that bring down their rings or their lobes. Last Confession, Eliot in Four Quartets, Spanish Translations, Einstein of Unsolved Equations, Mustache Soup Stained. I like how that speaks on the whole idea that no matter, you know, no matter how intelligent you may seem in some areas, there's always going to be other areas that you make a fool of yourself. And, of course, I got a big kick out of the humor and the innuendo within where he says, songs of Leonard Cohen metaphorically stripped, hotels by airports hostess to bless soft-headed Suzanne banana-sucking. Wonderful lines and very well done. And Rex, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, it's that first stanza which actually gives out the note of what's going on. Gray moss on stretched scrotum, an ancient fornicator, to wedding guest corner, tell a ballad of woe. So he's, all right, he's in the wedding guest corner, he's got the bridegroom. Hey, I got a story to tell you. And he outlines his life over the next 40 years. Right down to do this, do that, cat, de-sex, bucket with leak, her with kid, wanting more meat. And then that ancient emperor smoking special blend, to navel gaze down, notes that shrinked. Then the thought, once a hot sort of pleasure, a great flag to brag and flap, have the more considering, morning's henhouse fountain. He's left outlining what you once had, but now you don't. That thought with the condoms of career options, considerations, modern sales, paper pleasure, red light harbor, whilst gangplank, and then pop of the ancient, fate sublime for second person him, going out to fulfill needs, sad trophies of merriment, that slut geology came to town, Uncle Erosion, Grandma Gland, Minerals of Little Comprehension, Such a Worm to Dangle Over Gravity as well. The Toilets, That Note of Getting Old, Midget Turtle, again rolling in that, Lost Souls, Incarnate Need of Exorcism, then the book, Sex Addicts, that was pretty funny. And what is it? Chanting Denizens of Mortal Time. There you go. Graffiti of Last Artists Underground. Subways Going Home. Choir of Celtic Dominicans. Scarlet Gone with Wind. There Ain't No Mo. And Last Confessions. Farting on Her Death Row Gurney. Castration and Aztec Option. That kind of rolls up to the first stanza. Circumcision in between. Once When Gods Were Thirsty. Paradox of Fact. Oh, yeah. That thirst has kind of worn out its welcome and gone by the wayside because of that last time, the wrinkled assassin. I like that. Earlobes dangling, skin of indecision, Mona hanging, organ disappearing on belly's horizon, King Charles having a private audience. I thought that was funny.
That was. It definitely had great humor to it. Awesome comment there, Rex. All right. What do we have next?
Unrequited Love Song by Rebecca Thompson.
I am betrothed to a goddess of the dark. Her circled figure and silver freckles addicts my eyes to luminance. I bridge the waters to be with you and map your face with my song. You echo carrying tides and secrets. Oh, my maiden of mystery, why must you cave at dawn? The sun shines half as bright. My fur longs to brush you with your face or hear your silky whisper. But now my eyes will glisten as I summon a reverent choir. End poem. And this is actually from the contest, which was the art of Anita Zakina and various quotes, which was originally supposed to be a Twisted Tuesdays contest, but got moved to a break on through contest. And she wrote to prompt number six, which was the quote, maybe the wolf is in love with the moon, and each month it cries for a love it will never touch. And your thoughts on this, right, Rex?
Well, I didn't need to crow. That was going to be the answer, the simplicity of that lonesome, baleful bay from The Wolf in the Wild. A note, too, it's ideal. See the moon offer up its howl. Let it speak to the essence of that to which it bays for, the moon. Nicely done, Rebecca.
Absolutely. Oh, I have to agree. This is beautiful. And the way she speaks in the voice of the wolf expressing their love and the personification of the moon, I really like the lines. I mean, this is beautiful all the way through, but I especially like how she gives the moon freckles. Like, I thought silver freckles was a great way to describe the, like, when you look at a full moon and you see the different shading on it. And I also really liked this stanza. Oh, my maiden of mystery, why must you cave at dawn? The sun shines half as bright. And, you know, and I love the phrase made of mystery, not only for the alliteration, but the fact that the moon itself is such a source of mystery and power. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we have next, Rex?
And We Continue the Chase by Liquid Mind Forever. Scars prowl the bars and alleyways, seeking untouchables, lacks off the beaten tracks, subways, growling clutched mandibles. Special love-hate relationships, internships aboard battleships. Special love hate. Special love hate. Confusing love with ownership. Scars prowl the bars and alleyways, hoping to find kinship. Jarring, marring, warring displays. Target marksmanship. Insanity's vain attempt to connect with God without purview. Insanities, insanities, hoping for love without a clue. Scars prowl the bars and alleyways, scoffing down anything, lost inside the disconnected maze, flightless birds without wing. Vociferous, caterwauling, love-hate brawling, each one stalling. Vociferous, vociferous, Ahab spits his hate, appalling. Somehow we know we'll never know the touch of godly bliss. We search, we lurch, nothing to show. Though close, we always miss. Agendas grow cold alibis. Scheming, dreaming, each party lies. Agendas, agendas, masquerade. Love dissipates, dies. Somehow we know we'll never know the true blessings of love. We hang on way past time to go. What we need from above, we make believe we can eye for. What we think will reach to the core, we make believe what love is, but love so much more. Somehow we know, we'll never know, true servitorship space, indentured to self-will we blow, hot and cold, hardship not grace. We poke, we jab, we prowl, we howl, speak of love while flapping our jowl. We poke, we jab, we prowl, we howl, meanwhile, we thrown in the towel. And boom.
Great read there, Rex. And I really like this double Trajan form, refrain form that Liquid Mind Forever has been using. It just has a nice flow to it. I think she does it really well. It's a great opportunity to play with repetition. She wrote to the same quote, and it's always interesting to me to see how different people take the same quote. This one has great use of repetition because that's what the form calls for. And as I always say, when you use a form that calls for repetition, you have to have strong lines. And I think she does that, especially when she says, we make believe, and we poke, we jab, we poke, we jab, we prowl, we howl. I like how this speaks, first of all, literally on the different ways that wolves communicate. You know, the not only the howling, the verbal communication of wolves, but also how they are often very physical with each other, either with playfulness or with fighting. But it can also be on that whole idea, as it says, those special love-hate relationships, the idea of conflicting emotions within a relationship. And another part, I mean, I like this all the way through, but another part I really like is where she says, scars prowl the bars and alleyways, scarfing down anything lost inside disconnected maze, flightless birds without wing, voracious caterwauling, love-hate brawling. And I like those lines because she brings us from thoughts to having that connection with the moon, connection with God, with nature, to the lives of people prowling the bars and the alleyways who are desperate for some sort of connection. They've been disconnected from love, they've been disconnected from society, and they will do anything to get that, even if it's a cheap replacement of what, you know, connection and love was originally supposed to be. You know, at least that's how I read it. I think it's a wonderful write and very well done. And Rex, you did a great read of that, as always. Your thoughts?
It's a two-parter. That first one is all about the scene and where you prowl for what you're looking for. Scars prowl the bars and alleyways, seeking untouchables. Scars prowl the bars and the alleyways, hoping to find kinship. scoffs prowl the bars and alleyways, scoffing down anything. The idea of it's the place you go trolling for what you're looking for that makes the angle of where you, of what the remiss is in the second part, because somehow we know we'll never know the touch of godly bliss. Somehow we know we'll never know the true blessings of love. Somehow we know we'll never know the true servitorship of faith, indentured itself well with blow, hot and cold, hardship not grace. We poke, we jab, we prowl, we howl, speak of love while flapping our jowl. We poke, we jab, we prowl, we howl. Meanwhile, we've thrown in the towel. And that's the idea, giving in. But there was, we hang on way past time to go. That hits on the idea right back to that first stanza of everybody looks good at closing time. Why? Because you're all fucking toasted. It starts at one angle of barfly activity into the second angle of why they're throwing in the towel, because they've spent all their time in all the wrong places with all the wrong people, and they've taken a dirty outlook on life because of the experience in the first.
Yep. That is so true. Yep. The idea of just looking for love in all the wrong places and ending up disappointed. And yes, unfortunately, everybody looks good at closing time. It's that whole idea of those beer goggles. So, but great comment there, Rex. And what do you have for us next?
The Gate to Eternity by Jasmine Sejan.
Am I but a body of unrest, getting burned but not burning? I saw sand laid on my vulnerability, but water sweeping it away. I was lost among the buildings, skyscrapers and city heights. Bridges let me pass across, alas, an alarming speed. I could not catch the race of time. Let it pass. I am but a whisper of smoke, puffing away to an eternal cast. I drift myself to an eternal bliss, walk away to a thin path, just to let go of all the jargon carrying my wits across. Dark dungeon of a vicious mind, crawling cocoons on the sides of me, I quieted my mind to let my soul speak. I trust the dream that led me. The gate of eternity was not yet mine. I was still a vagabond. I moving towards a laser beam, white cream and beige delight. I was pushed to the cliff of light. The clouds carried me, lily of the valley, jasmine and rose. Fragrances beckoned my green path. I fought my night turned to light. The sun was a young yonder. Call me never to taste that speed. My teacher in nature will be. Fly, fly, let me be. To listen to the chirp of the tree. Fly, fly, let me be. I will return to renew at ease. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Oh, that one was easy. Because she hits on body of unrest, lost among the buildings, skyscrapers, and city heights. Bridges let me pass across, alas, in a long speed. All right, she's in a big city, rat race, too many people, everything moves too fast. There's, you got to catch this, the cab to the next stop, the trolley to uptown, the train down, it doesn't really matter. Could not catch the race of time. Everything's moving too fast for her. She's got to get out because that dark dungeon of viscous mind was crowding her out. Some last four stanzas could have hit on that idea. The gate of eternity was not yet mine. I was still a vagabond. I'm moving towards a laser beam, white cream and beige delight. The idea of actually seeing something beyond the grayness of a large city and its tall buildings. pushed the clip of light. I found my night, turned the light. The sun was a young yonder. Call me never to taste that speed. My teacher and nation will be. And then she hits, I will return to renew at ease. The idea of finding that note to eternity by getting out of the city, even if for a brief time, to re-energize, renew, and see something besides the angry concrete and heat that eats at her mind.
Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. And she was inspired by two quotes. Trust the dream, for in them is hidden the gate to eternity, by Khalil Gibran. And come forth into the light of things. Let nature be your teacher. I don't remember who did that quote, but I thought the imagery and metaphors in this was wonderful. And I too saw the idea of the rat race and the male, especially I was lost among the buildings, skyscrapers and city heights. Bridges let me pass across, alas, an alarming speed. Because oftentimes when you're surrounded by people, you can feel very lonely, very lost, and everything can feel extremely overwhelming. I also like how she fits in the spiritual message of the idea that no matter where you live on this earth, it is only temporary. Whether you believe you go somewhere else or life just ends, either way, it's still temporary, but and so I really like where she says, the gate of eternity was not yet mine. I was still a vagabond, I moving towards a laser beam, white cream and beige delight. I was pushed to the cliff of light, the clouds carried me. Lily of the valley, jasmine and rose, fragrances beckon my green path. I like that, and I like how it speaks on enjoying nature and connecting with nature, but it also speaks on acknowledging that Earth is a temporary home, but even as a temporary home, we need to find that peace of mind that we need. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
At AD 2050, RIP, Gaia, by Eric Swenson.
All right, and we have a recording for this, so here we go.
AD 2050. R.I.P. Gaia, 248 years after, the world is too much with us, late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. My heart aches, my body quakes, yeah, where I shuffle through red marsh and soil. Space suit stifles, lead boots tax all reserves. Quantum leap of faith didn't turn out as expected. It's not the same. Inserted microchip in my brain ensures all bells and whistles perform splendidly. Pine for rainforest and virtual reality streams it. Stagnant, sterile images yearn for a coral reef dive. Charming microchip delivers. Multiverse of rainbow fish swirl about, but it's not the same. I absent-mindedly fondle some abject greenhouse plants, nice, neat lines of aeroponics, not a dandelion weed in sight. Never thought I'd pine for poison ivy and rocks covered with moss. winter's first hoar frost on gangly grass. Certainly no steaming carpets to warm my freezing Martian feet in. Microchip obliges and streams virtual reality, but it's not the same. Senseless cerebral feed irks. Lead boots reprimand with each jerk, pull plonk down step. If only poets had more clout back then. Instant zap from the microchip, neurons punished for remembering. Thou shalt not question the promised, signed, sealed, and duly delivered, brave new world. If only I could weep, cry, but my tear ducts were removed before we were shipped to Mars. AI traced some poetry I'd published way back when. Still struggle with a deadpan facial expression. Dust to dust. Once upon a time, wit and dry humor now shriveled like my testicles. Nutcracker AI deigned all libertine should be neutered. It's not the same anymore. Never will be. All free radicals erased from the bloodstream. End poem.
Brilliant read and write there, Eric. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Great. This has great imagery and metaphors, a serious message within the storytelling, and yet also a great wit and sense of humor. I like how he brings us into a write that's science fiction-like and yet hits too hard on reality. You know, he tells us a story that starts with the lines, 248 years after the world is too much with us, late and soon, getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. You know, and that is so true. And he wrote to the quote, come forth into the light of things. And I like how he speaks on the idea not only of us having abandoned the earth, but more importantly, the idea of abandoning an individuality, of thinking for ourselves and expressing, you know, ourselves. And, you know, I like that he brings in AI. Also, a great nod towards Aldous Huxley's A Brave New World. You know, if only poets had more clout back then, instant zap from the microchip, neurons punished for remembering, thou shalt not question the promise signed, sealed, and duly delivered, brave new world. You know, the idea, like, how dare you question technology? How dare you? You know, like, we are trying to improve your life, and you dare to question these improvements? But really, in the long run, to take away people's individual thoughts expressed through poetry, and let's face it, throughout centuries, poets have been the ones to speak up on so many issues. I also got a big kick out of when he says about AI believing that all these, like, where was that? Oh, yeah, Nutcracker AI deigned all libertines should be neutered. In other words, you know, it's kind of like not only artificial intelligence, but even the whole idea of, you know, saying, well, this is the way poetry always has to be, you know, rather than playing with words. you know. And once upon a time, wit and dry humor, now shriveled like my testicles. You know, we are, and I like that, not only because the imagery just cracks me up and is so true, but because of the fact that we are living in a society where it's getting more and more difficult to have a sense of humor in. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, he's hitting on things that are walking at the very same angle, just like 1984, THX-1138, Atlas Shrugged, Brave New World, and so many other films in prediction about what they will do to you. This will be the new slavery, AI, and that note to the chip in your head, which they're already playing with now, and which he admits, yes, a little a twinge, a spasm to get you on the right thought again. But what he doesn't mention is that can also be a kill switch. Think the wrong thing, turn you off permanently. No eye ducks. Why? Can't have those. Can't have you feeling certain ways. Take away all emotion. Take away all possibility of that which the body and mind seek to feel, see, and hear in the virtual reality streams. They've already got that rolling thanks to, Kuckerborg. Yeah, that's spent a whole lot of money on that, but it ain't coming out the way he wants it. And I won't be around if this comes to pass. So have fun with it in the future, you guys, because this is what you've been asking for. Enjoy.
Yeah, that's all I can say is thank goodness I'm not going to be around in 2050 if that's the way it's going to end up being, because yeah, life is going in some crazy directions, but great observations there, Rex. All right, and what do we got next?
Radio Static Snares by Mermaid.
Shifting gears, we toss our names into marshmallow bubble baths with essential oils of ambiance as indigo messages pop off scarlet dresses and shamrock tresses. The weight of heaviness dissipates and full silver moons sink in unison. Lines turn a phrase behind closed lids to lint-covered marriages or sugar-coated ways where barefoot and ambivalence flips. Drawers, closets, and cute cubby holes until speed was a freak we held close and windows blew hair to fall furbish. Affairs caught off radio static snares above open sun roofs and crisp winter air. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Sounds like the listening to radio while you're preparing for an evening out. The marshmallow bubble bath, the indigo messages pop off, scarlet dresses, shamrock dresses. So night's coming. Weight of heaviness dissipates and full silver moons sink in unison. Lines turn a phrase behind closed lids to lint-covered marriages, sugar-coated waves, where both barefoot and ambivalence flips. Getting back to youth. Drawers, closets, cute cubby holes, until speed was a freak with hell close and windows blew hair to crow furbish. Upstairs, caught off radio static, snares above open sunroofs in crisp winter air. That last one kind of hits with the idea of actually driving off into oblivion.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. Great thoughts shared. But yeah, I do like, you know, it does have a gentle and surreal feel to it. And the whole idea, as you were saying, of, you know, just relaxing, you know, perhaps either getting ready for a night out or even just, you know, taking a bath and enjoying, you know, the moment, just, you know, to relax and have fun. I really like the weight of heaviness dissipates and full silver moons sink in unison. Lines turn a phrase behind closed lids to lint-covered marriages or sugar-coated waves where barefoot ambiance flips. And I do like how, to me, that does, I personally don't find baths relaxing, but I know a lot of people do. And I like how that speaks on the lines of those things that help us to relax. You know, maybe it's that bubble bath, maybe it's that music. Affairs caught off radio static snares above open sunroofs in crisp winter air. And I don't know, I like how there's something very energizing about those lines and about that imagery. And the way it speaks on the idea of just all the senses being opened up to the air around you and to everything, like just being out underneath the night sky, looking up and realizing how truly just pure and beautiful things are when you're able to get out into the great expanse of it all. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
His Eyes and Walks by Blue Right 76. Water not dirty, meat not bloody, bones not crispy, beds not leaky, hands on mane, loving eyes, hugs are many, sighs with them, fought not for food and drink, roam not under moon's light. No stars and galaxies to ponder and stares, no butterflies and bees to tease and play. His presence divine, man did crave, was it his silence or the woods in him? He shied away from mankind's touch, flighty duke around new homes, his beauty marred by pestering mammals, the jungle lives on in his eyes and walks. End poem.
Great read, Rex. I'm glad Blue Right 76 was inspired by this painting. That painting is actually titled Van Gogh's Cat, which I thought was such a great title. And you can definitely see it with the painting, the cat laying on its back, batting at the stars, which are painted in a similar style to the swirls that Van Gogh painted in. But I like the short, bouncy lines and the imagery. It creates a nice, like, I think there's a better word than bouncy, but that's the one that comes to my mind. And I like how the first two stanzas, water not dirty, meat not bloody, bones not crispy, beds not leafy, hands on mane, love in eyes, hugs a many, sighs with him. Speaks on the idea of life not being perfect, but still enjoying what you have. And, of course, you know, this really brings out the personality of the cat, especially when it says, his presence divine man did crave. Was it his silence or the woods in him? And I like that because it speaks on the idea of how, you know, like in ancient Egypt, cats were worshipped. And then eventually, you know, and they were brought into the home as pets. And, you know, what was it about cats that they craved? Was it the silence or the woods? Was it, you know, the personality of the cat, or was it the wilderness within, the wildness within the cat? Of course, from what I've read and what I believe, cats mainly, it became a mutually beneficial relationship for them to have cats simply because of rodent populations and because so many diseases were carried by rodents. The people got the rodents killed, the animals had, the cats had food and protection. But I like how this speaks on marred beauty and the wilderness, the wildness, I keep saying wilderness, but I mean the wildness of animals out in nature, and how there is those scars that they all must bear. And yet you will oftentimes, you know, watch videos of animals, even like larger animals, like lions, and watch and see the playfulness within them. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, I didn't take this as the cat itself. I kind of about the idea of zoos. And housing those out of their natural habitats where they don't have that angle anymore, getting fresh bloody meat, cracking bones, not having to fight food and drink, not roaming under the moonlight in the cool air. What else we have? But, yeah, it does fit more to the cat. It does, Rowan. You let cats outside, they will go, and they will find themselves some fresh meat. That is they haven't lost that edge, that certainty in knowing, catching a bird, catching a squirrel, and then eating that delicious piece of fresh meat. Why? Because it's part and parcel of their blood. It's their bread and butter, and they do miss it because that's why they're up and around all night long, running, playing, and wreaking havoc. It's because they still remember when they could roam the night and take their fill of everything they wanted.
I like that thought, yeah. But I think your original thought on the line was actually correct because I didn't get down to their AN, but I looked up at the AN and it says, I am scared of them, and I feel sorry for them. It's strange, but they look sad, always as if they miss the jungle. And I think that could apply not only to lions, but to any animals that you would see at the zoo. I mean, obviously not all animals from the zoo come from the jungle, but the idea that you look at these animals, and, yeah, they're safe and they're protected, and you're safe from them because they're, you know, behind a cage. But you can't help but wonder, you know, is it within their instinct, you know, to miss where they came from? And your comment brought that up, Rex, is the idea that, yeah, cats have that instinct to be what they were originally called to be, as do, I think, most animals. So great observation. And what do we have next?
How I Wish by Julie Buck.
Snap peas with fresh salmon, like an air brushing paint, like an airbrushed painting. And because I know how I can be, I raise the ruby flag and salute the oval yellow sun and me. But put the cows out to pasture, the muddy pigs in their pens, and I'll draw you a bath with waves wilder than hens being plucked. Insulate the wry humor with stern walls, otherwise sheep will wander and mops will swish. Now I wait for a better place. Oh, how I wish, end poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I raise the ruby flag and salute the oval sun and me. The ruby flag, anger. Then the thought to the farm angle was put the cows out in the pasture, money pigs in their pens, and I'll draw you a bath of waste while them hens being plucked. It was a nice touch. And to get that, oh, how I wish, all I could see was Calgon, take me away.
Yep. I could see that too. Very cool. Great comment. But yeah, I really like how this speaks on the idea of coming to the end of a busy day. Snap peas with fresh salmon, like an airbrushed painting. That makes me think of the idea of how people always want to take pictures of their food. I'm guilty of that too, but yeah. But snap peas and fresh salmon actually sound really good. I love the imagery of, and I'll draw you a bath with waves wilder than hens being plucked. The idea, and to me that speaks on, you know, not just a regular bath, but almost as if it's like enjoying a lake, you know, like the, I don't know, like I picture, like, even though I know it's probably about just a regular bath, I picture two people at the end of the day walking at the edge of a lake, and insulate the wry humor with stern walls. Otherwise, sheep will wander and mops will swish. I like that. A clever line about the sheep, I feel like the sheep are a representation of those wandering thoughts and those wandering tongues that say the wrong things, and then we end up having to clean up after ourselves. It's an excellent write by Julie, and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Lobster Lessons by K.F. Heartless. Sun-dried sheets signal my defeat. Surrender means I must cross the contrail bridge formed by the UAP victory lap in search of a life as a serving girl somewhere in the sloppy swirl of a gainfully employed galaxy. Below, sidewalks smile and cracks, stray dogs roam, and legacy machines rust. I light up one last puff, knowing what is native will once again overtake my old home. I can't see the moon past tempered glass, an anthill high-rise built in the sky's crevasse, 40 suffocating stories that must be evacuated tonight. We are but a forgotten moment, a race of failed trust. The planet has abandoned us. And boom.
Wonderful read there, Rex, and what a brilliant write by K.F. Heartless. Amazing imagery and metaphors. I like how this speaks on victory, but it speaks on a victory found in a life of servitude, and trying to get away from that, trying to find yourself, trying to find your own path. I really like, I light up one last puff knowing what is native will once again overtake my old home. I can't see the moon past tempered glass, an anthill high rise built in the sky's crevasse. I like that imagery and metaphors, and the whole idea that, to me anyways, that speaking on the idea that we let the small things get in the way of the big picture. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, she hits on that. What was it? 40 suffocating stories that must be evacuated tonight. That's the end, and it does hit on UAP victory lap, unidentified aerial phenomena. So it's started by aliens. And the evacuate tonight means the end of that particular city. I mean, wouldn't be such a too bad a thing, although it depends on where you have to go after that. But that sort of knowing what is made will once again overtake my old home. True. That might stand for a long time, glass blown out, concrete rotting, and until finally the steel gives way. But that'll take a little bit of time. But meanwhile, everything else will be taken easily in the moment in 100 years, while the rest kind of rots in the moment. We are but a forgotten moment, a race of failed trust, the planet has abandoned us. That also is a note to failures on multiple levels, us and those who rule, and the fact that you let this happen. So surrender comes in obsolescence. It comes in death. It comes in the last thing we see.
That is so true. I like how you brought up the idea of our own shortcomings, our own failures, and those things which we allow to happen. So great observations there. We will have a few carryovers, I think three or four if I'm guessing right, but I did want to mention some upcoming shows.
You've got one from Jenny, one from Teresa, and one from Dark and Orange.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and we'll put those on the on Tuesday's After Midnight show. So, like I said, Halloween week is coming up. So make sure to keep an eye out on the contest and topic boards put up by Late Night Poets, hosts, and hostesses. Join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Open Poetry with Fill My Eyes and Company. If she's feeling better, I'm not sure if Faizy is going to be having parts in her, parts saint, but that's usually on Saturdays at 12:30 a.m. Saturday 10 p.m. is Gray Eye Smith and with what's the show called?
Bad Company.
Bad Company. Yes, that's it, man. And Sunday's 12:30 a.m. show, we have Delving the Darkness, and Arcana is running a contest for that, which is open to pre-writes. Arcana Moore is running a contest open to pre-writes, and it's on High Strangeness, which is basically like the unidentified UFOs, cattle manipulation, strange singles emanating from unknown, skinwalkers, that kind of stuff. Check it out. See if you got something that fits, or perhaps you're inspired by the theme or by one of the prompts. And then, of course, that brings us to your show, Rex, Rhythm and Rhyme, on Sunday at 10 p.m. And what do you got going on there?
Isley Brothers in tribute
nice.
To Rudolph.
Yes, another one passed away, but that should be a very inspiring show. And, of course, we have your After Midnight show, what do you got going on there on Tuesday?
Vonnegut quote from Slaughterhouse.
Yes, I like that. Very cool. I like that. I myself right now have four different contests running, and who knows, I might have a fifth or sixth one up pretty soon too. You just never know what's going to happen. So, great show tonight, Rex. Thank you as always for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all, and have a wonderful night, everyone.
Good night, all.